All right, so we are holding on Nun Amadei's fourth line. We're up to the next part of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah said a keres apnimi, that if the inner keres has a hole in it, then the animal is chased. The keres, we said, is the largest of the four, it's the first and largest of the four stomachs of the animal. There's a picture of it, for example. So if there's a hole, so we're saying that there's a pnimi, there's an inner part of it, that if that is that if that has a hole, then we said the animal is chick.
And the other part is not?
That's what we have to figure out, what we mean by keres apnimi. It seems to imply that there's some part within the keres itself. So actually the Mishnah had said like this, a keres apnimis shenikva. It said if the inner keres has a hole, which as we've been saying all this time, a hole implies any size hole, or most of the outer keres is ripped open, then the animal is chafed. And we had Rabbi Yehuda saying that there's an amount, a tefach in a large animal, or there's a majority in a small animal. So we have to figure out what is keres apnimis versus hachitzoina. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, heyed nosen bar shila gave edus, and he was resh tabchaya de sikori, he was the head of the butchers, the shochim of Sipori, he testified lefnei Rebbe, in front of Rebbe, Mishum Rav Nosson, in the name of Rav Nosson, saying, Ezuhi keres apnimi, what is the keres apnimi? That would be sanya divi. Sanya divi, Rashi gives two explanations. One is that it means, Rashi's first explanation is, sanya divi, sanya means hated, divi means by wool. Meaning, in other words, according to Rashi's first explanation, the keres apnimis that we're describing over here is the blind sac, the cecum. You can see it over here in the picture. That the reason why it's called sanya divi is because it's so lean. The meat of it is so lean and it's so disgusting that even the wolves won't bother with it. And if wolves take an animal and rip it open, they won't even bother trying to eat that part because it's so lean and so disgusting. Here you can see it over here. So here's the stomach as a whole, the whole digestive system as a whole, and there you have the cecum hanging off over there, actually. So according to Rashi's first explanation, that's what it is. Rashi's second explanation is that sanya divi means, again, sanya means hated, like disgusting. Divi means that divi is like the Hebrew, is like the word zav in Hebrew, that it flows out. So Rashi describes that this is an area of the stomach where when they open up an animal and they're taking out all the intestines and everything, they cut open some part of the keres in order to allow the contents of it to flow out. So Rashi, according to that second explanation, Rashi doesn't specify what that part is, but here in Sichas Cholin, he suggests that it's over here. You have like in the keres itself, leaving aside before you get to the cecum, which is much further on, in the digestive system, you have these little sacs over here, these little blind sacs at the back of the keres itself. So that may be, according to Rashi's second explanation, what we mean by sanya divi. So anyway, according to that, so it means that one or the other of those, either cecum or those blind sacs, Nosson bar Shila is telling us in the name of Rav Nosson, that is the definition of keres apnimi. That is the part where even a small hole in it will make the animal chafe, as opposed to the rest of the keres, where it would only be chafe if the majority of it was ripped open. Okay.
Why is that? Why?
Same as all the other chafes. The Chachamim either had the Kabbalah, or they figured out with the knowledge that they had that only in those places, only in that particular place, would it be fatal to the animal. In other places, it wouldn't. V'chein Amar Rabbi Yishua ben Korcha Sanya Divi. Rabbi Yishua ben Korcha says the same thing, that it means the Sanya Divi, according to either of these two explanations. Okay. Then we have other opinions. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Istumcha de Karsa. Rabbi Shmuel says that it is the Istumcha of the Keres. So Istumcha, Rashi says that he heard that it's a word in Laz, but he says I don't know what it is. I don't know to explain what istumcha de karusa means. Istumcha is actually related to the word stomach. So therefore, the idea might, and the word stomach literally means from, it actually comes from a Greek word that means the opening. So it might be that it means
the dandy trap.
in English, the word stomach, but the word stoma, and it comes from the word, ultimately it comes from the word stoma in Greek, which means the opening of. The stomach is called that, it's like the opening, the opening to the digestive system, so to speak. So Rashi is not quite sure, he says, what the, or at least according to the gears that we have in front of us, Rashi is not quite sure what Sumcha de Karsa is, but one possibility, again, given that it means the opening, it may mean over here the opening from the, may mean the opening into the Keres, this area over here.
So what does that mean, the opening of the Keres?
It literally means the opening of the Keres. It doesn't mean. But well, there's another opening at the other end, which goes into the Beis HaKosis and the Hemsis, so maybe it means that.
The opening of the Keres.
But so you can also think of it as the opening to the Keres. You can also think, whatever, you can also think of it as, okay. Okay, whatever. In Oruch, he brings that the Stumcha, the Keres, that might be the Hemsis. And again, the reason is because ultimately the Hemsis has a connection to the Keres, because you have all the stomachs are kind of interconnected over there. Okay, anyway, that's another opinion. What the Keres means. Rav Asi Omer Rav Yechanan. Then we have another opinion. Rav Asi says in the name of Rav Yechanan, Mokum Tsar Yesh Bekeres. There was a narrow area in the Keres. The Eni Yedei Ezehu. However, Rav Asi says, or maybe Rav Yechanan says, I don't know what that narrow area is. Whatever that narrow is, maybe not necessarily. Wait. So there's some part of the Keres which is narrower than the rest. That would be called the Keres HaPnimi. The rest of it would be called the Keres HaChitzoni. However, Omer of Nachum Yitzchok said, so what good does that do? Not for Kreis Bevera. With that, it's like a Keres has fallen into the well. In other words, what good, Rav Asi, what did you accomplish by telling us that there's some narrow place? If you can't even define where it is, that doesn't help us any. Okay, Omer of Acha Bar Ava. Omer of Asi, however, Rav Acha Bar Ava comes and clarifies to us in the name of Rav Asi, I'll explain to you what that narrow area is. Mina Meisar Ulamasa. It's from the area where it starts narrowing and going down. Down, as usual, we're talking in terms of when the animal is hung up after the shtetl, when they hang it up to strip off the skin and to open it. Meaning, in other words, we're talking towards the head end. In the live animal, it would be up, but in the dead animal, after it's hung up, then it's down. So, in other words, the point is that you have towards the esophagus, right, where it's starting to narrow. That would that area where it starts narrowing, that would be the Keres HaPnimi, and the rest of it would be called the Keres HaKeitzon. Another opinion, Rav Yaakov Bar Nachmeni Omer Shmuel, the place that is the Keres HaPnimi, where again even a small hole will make it safe, Mokum She'en Ben Milas. That would be the area of the Keres which does not have wool. Now we talked about the other day that you have within the Keres, you have these little hair-like things, the papilla, the villi, whatever they're called exactly medically, which help absorb the animal absorbs nutrients through them. So you have in different areas of the keres, you have in some areas where you have there, you have some areas where you have where you don't, you have areas in the digestive system where you don't have those at all. Then you have ones where you have them, but they're more spread further apart, so they can be thought of as hair, which is what we called them earlier in the perek. And then you have places where they're more tightly packed together, and that's what the Gemara is calling over here wool. So either way, they're villi, but it's a question how thickly, how dense they are. Right. So the place which doesn't have milas, that would be, and then Rashi describes that those things afterwards, when you want to eat the keres, you have to use hot water and scrape them off. That would be that area that does not have milas. That would be the inner keres. Okay. Another opinion, Rav Avina Amar Gniva Meshmeder Av Tefach Bevesht Samach LaKeres. The last tefach of the vesh of the esophagus close to the keres, Zui Keres Apnimis. That would be the inner keres. Now we mentioned that opinion the other day in a different context. And we said, actually, there's two possible ways of understanding that opinion. Either it means exactly what it sounds like, that the last tefach of the esophagus is called the keres hapnimis, and the whole keres as a whole, the entire, what we, you would usually think of as the keres, is all called keres hachitzoina, and the animal treif only if most of it is ripped open. Or we said the other way around, maybe what it means is, the vesh itself, the whole length of it is the vesh. The beginning of the keres, you have the first tefach of the keres closest to the vesh. Maybe that would be the area that we're calling keres hapnimis, which would be therefore be similar narrow. That second way. Yeah, it would be similar to what we said about the narrowing area. It might not be the exact same, but it would be close enough. But the other possibility we said over there is that especially in an ox, the lower part of the vesh itself already starts having villi. So therefore, it could be that that's what it means. That already that part can be considered in that sense part of the keres. Okay. And then another opinion, Amri b'ma'arav ha'mashmeidah Rabbi Yosef b'chanina, they said in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, in the name of Rabbi Yosef b'chanina, no, none of the above, kol ha'keres kuloi zuhi keres ha'pnimis. The entire organ, which is called the keres, the entire rumen, is called the keres ha'pnimis.
Why?
Because that's how they learned, that any part of that, where there's a hole, the animal will be changed. Ah, so the ezu keres ha'chitzon. So according to that definition, what would be called the keres ha'chitzon? That wouldn't be part of the keres itself, but rather basar ha'choifa es roiv ha'keres. That would be the muscles that cover most of the keres. You have to understand that in the animal, you have the keres is partially behind the ribs, and partially it's hidden behind the ribs. You have the ribs go from near the front of the animal, and they go past the diaphragm, and they go, and then the rib cage includes part of the keres. But then you have the rest of the keres is not behind the ribs. The rest of the keres is just protected by the flanks of the animal. Without the ribs, it's lower down than the ribs.
So what's the keres
achitzon? So therefore, in other words, what we're saying is that the keres achitzon is basar achoifes roiv keres, is the muscles that cover most of the keres. Rashi describes what it is the keres, a smaller percentage of the keres is behind the ribs. The majority of it is not behind the ribs, but just under this crumb that we're describing over here, just this membrane which we have between the keres and the actual flank of the animal, the actual muscles on the side of the animal. So they're telling us in the name of Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina that whole area over there. Here's a picture. So you have, in other words, the part of the keres is protected by the ribs. Most of it is not. Most of it, there's no ribs in front of it. Just you have that membrane between it and the flanks of the animal. That membrane that covers it is basar achoifes roiv keres. And if most of that, a small puncture in that won't make a trace. A puncture anywhere in the keres itself, we're saying, will make the animal trace. But a puncture in this basar achoifes roiv keres will not make the animal trace, only if it's berubo, only if it's a majority of that area is ripped.
So that's the keres.
So the whole keres itself, what we think of as the keres, the entire rumen that contains the food, would be called the keres apnim. The keres achitzon would be the.
Show me the keres achitzon.
So let's see if we can find a picture. So here, for example, so you have here's the keres. Here's the keres as a whole, and the keres apnimi would be basically the side of the animal over there. So if a majority of those muscles are ripped, then the animal is going to be trained. The keres would be lying against the muscles over there, right? Yeah. Okay.
That's another interpretation, right?
And that's the most strict interpretation, because so far all the other ones have been saying that within the keres itself, within the first stomach itself, you have parts where if it's punctured it's trace, and parts where if it's punctured it's not trace. Now, according to Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, we're saying any part of it that's punctured, the animal is automatically trace. Only we're talking about when the muscles of the animal's flank are punctured, then it's not necessarily trace unless it's ripped most of the way through.
So he's the most
stringent opinion. Rabba Bar Rav Huna says, here's another Zuri Keres Apnimis, and therefore even a small hole will make it straight.
Why would it say Keres Apnimi for the whole Keres?
Because therefore we would say, as opposed to Hachitzonim, which means the muscles that cover the Keres.
That's not the Keres, but nevertheless,
we can call it Keres Hachitzonim. When you think about it, Keres means stomach of the animal.
Yeah.
Rashi regularly translates over here the word keres as panza, which is like the English word paunch. And when you talk about a person's paunch, Okay, fine. When you talk about a person, it's related to the English word paunch. It's a cognitive bit, whatever. When you talk about a person's paunch, you're not necessarily talking about a kishkis. You're talking about that he has a big abdomen. Yeah, yeah. So in other words, we can be talking about the abdomen. You can be talking about the what's inside it, namely the stomach, or what's outside it, namely the muscles of it. Okay. Rabba Barabuna Oma Machlata. Rabba Barabuna says here's another definition of what the keres hapnimi is. That would be the machlata. And my mafrata. So what do we mean by mafrata? Amr of Ivya Hecha the Pari Tabachi. That would be the area that when the butchers open up the animal, that is the part that you see first. Namely, so you have like this, when you're cutting open the animal. That's another definition, exactly. When you start cutting open the animal, eventually you get to the
muscle.
Right. Well, but the point is, until now we were talking about when we were talking about the muscles or the flanks or whatever. But here we're talking about that. And also according to Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, by the way, we don't necessarily mean actually the sides over here. We may be meaning more the bottom, because the keres is a rather large organ. It kind of wraps around from the side all the way to the bottom. Anyway, Rabba Barabuna is saying, going back to, forget about this idea of muscles. The muscles won't make it, a rip in the muscles won't make it straight for a while. He's saying there is a difference within the keres, between keres ha-pnimi and keres ha-chitzon, like everybody else was saying. However, the difference is not between the front and the back of it, like everyone else was saying, but rather between the bottom of it and the top of it. The bottom of it, which is the side, where when the animal is alive, the side faces towards the ground. And when you shech the animal and you hang it up, you cut open on the bottom of the animal, and then you get to where you can see the keres. That first part of the keres that you can see, that is the keres hapnimi, says Rabbi Barabona. The lowest part of the keres. Because it's pnimi, I guess, because it's more internal, because like the rest of it, you could call it more external. It's closer to the back of the animal. So in a certain sense, this is like more internal to the animal because it's closer to its belly. Okay. All right. So what's the actual halacha? So b'nahadah avdi k'rav barabuna. In nahadah, their minhag was according to Rabbi Barabuna's definition that only the bottom of the keres is the keres hapnimi. So only if there was a hole in that area would they declare the animal treif. If there was a hole anywhere else, they would declare the animal. That according to the last definition, Rabbi Barabuna's definition, that only the bottom part of the bottommost part of the keres is called the keres hapnimi. All the rest of it.
Does that include the muscles? And
No. Forget the muscles. Rabbi Barahona is saying, never mind the muscles. The muscles, even if the muscles are ripped, the animal is not trait. The only thing that would make it trait within the keres itself. Rabbi Barahona is going to say, given that we're distinguishing between keres apnimi and keres achisan, he's going to say the bottom part of the keres over here is the keres apnimi, and if that has a hole, the animal is trait, right? But if any other part of the keres, including the blind sacks, including the top part, including the front, anything else, if it has a rip in it, if it has a hole in it, it's kosher, unless the rip is berubah, unless it's most of it. Yeah. Okay. Omalei Rav Ashi Lameimer, so Rav Ashi asks Amemer, who Amemer himself was actually from Nahadah, so Rav Ashi is asking Amemer, let me ask you about the minhag of the place of Nahadah, where you come from, how does that work? Kolhani Shmaitzamai, why are you in Nahadah holding according to Rabbi Barabona? What about all these other explanations that we said of what the keres hapnimi is? After all, with all the other definitions that we had, you have reasons to argue that maybe the keres hapnimi is the whole keres or some other part of it. Why are you holding only like Rabbi Barabona's definition? On the lay, Sir Amema answers him, because Kulu Shaychan b'de Rabbi Barabona or de Rav Asi. Because he says that actually all the other definitions that we said are all included within the definitions of Rabbi Barabuna, and all of them are included in Rabbi Barabuna's statement. This that we said, we started saying it means the Sanya Divi, and then we said it might be the Istumcha, and it might be the place where it doesn't have wool. All of them, as Rashi explains, are somewhere on that side of the. They're somewhere in that area of the keres. So either they're there or they're higher up or they're lower down. So if you say that entire part of the keres that a hole in it will make the animal safe, automatically that includes all the other various opinions that said that the keres hapnimi is part of the keres itself. Let's see if we can find a picture that illustrates that. So what we're saying over here is okay. I guess that's hard to find a good picture of it, I guess. But the point is, he's telling us that this, you're saying the side of the keres that faces towards the ground is Rav Barav Huna's definition. Automatically, that includes all the other definitions that we were saying so far. So therefore, if
some definitions of the keres is the posterior part of the animal.
We had two definitions of Sanya Div, you remember. One of them was that it wasn't part of the keres at all, but rather the cecum. And the other, the cecum is also in that area, fine. But even if you say it's the blind sac, those are also towards the bottom over there. When you open up the animal, then you see those. It also includes the area where there's no wool. It also includes the area where it narrows, et cetera. It's all included in that side of the text. Okay, what about Rav Asi Amar Rav Yechanan Mai? Okay, what about Rav Asi's definition in the name of Rav Yechanan, where he said the part where it narrows, which we said it meant the part where it narrows towards the esophagus. That's not the part you see when you first open up the bottom of the animal. Amalek, Rav Pirshut, Rav Acha Ba'ava. Okay, but Rav Acha Ba'ava. No, that's actually what he was asking like this. Rav Asi had said in the name of Rav Yechanan that there's a narrow part, but I don't know what it is. You don't know what that narrow part is, so it could be anywhere in the keres. So what?
Where is there a narrow part in the keres?
Again, Rav Asi had said in the name of Rav Yechanan, there's a narrow area in the keres, but I don't know what it is. So the question is, if we don't know what it is, it could be anywhere in the keres. So you're back to, what do you mean?
Narrow areas in the keres.
Okay, but nevertheless, it's not necessarily the part. It's not part of the mafrasa necessarily. It's not necessarily part of Rav Barav Huna's definition. Amalei, so Rav Meimer tells him, no problem. Krav Pirsha Rav Acha Ba'ava. Okay, Rav Acha Ba'ava already explained that it means the area closer to the esophagus. That is also included in the mafrasa. When you open up the bottom of the animal, when you make a slit on the bottom over there, yes, you do see that area as well. Okay, what about Rav Avinu Ujibnei Ma'arav Amai? What about Rav Avinu's definition, and which is that it's the end of the esophagus, the last tepach of the esophagus? And what about Amri B'Ma'arav, where we said the entire keres is the keres of Nunis? Amalei, so
the entire
that was we said Rav Yosi Ben Chanina's definition was that you have the entire keres versus the muscles that cover it. Amalei, Sameima says, you're right, Hani Babi Pligi, you're right, those last two opinions that you mentioned, Rav Avinu and the Bnei Ma'arava's opinion of necessity, you're right, those disagree with Rav Barav Huna. So fine, we in Nahada are holding, so again, we have like six or seven definitions over here. Most of them are included in Rav Barav Huna's definition. Okay, you have two of them. You have Rav Avinu's and you have Rav Yosef Rav Chanina's that disagree with that. They would define Keres Hapnimi more broadly. But we in the Haggadah are held by Rav Barav Huna because his opinion is, aside from those two, is the broadest of the opinions. L'maisa, the halacha is actually like Rav Yosef of Chanina's opinion, which is that the entire keres, because after all, we don't have decided in the Gemara over here who the halacha should be like, so we have to go according to the strictest opinion, and we have to be machmir, because it is, therefore the whole keres is considered the keres hapnimi, and a hole anywhere in it is going to make the animal straight.
This is the whole keres?
Yeah, that's the whole keres.
So it's the whole four stomachs.
Well, no. It's only the one stomach is the keres. It's true the other stomachs, if they have holes, it's also treifa, but those are other treifa. Those are a separate category of treifa. Again, keep in mind, the keres is the largest of those four stomachs, and it does fill up a large part of the, of the abdomen of the animal, but it's not all. There still are the other three stomachs as well.
So in this picture, where is it?
So in this picture, this is the keres over here. This is the keres of this, actually, and this. This whole thing over here is the keres. That's the first stomach.
This and this,
is all the keres. Yes. And by the way, you can see the fat on it. That's the schematic of the fat on it, or at least where the fat is attached to it. As we said yesterday, the rest of it is kind of a sheet that drapes over it. Yes. And then you have, there's the beta cosis, there's the hemphysis, and there's the
cape. This is a view from above? Or?
This is a view showing from the right side of the animal. If you were to look from the left side, you wouldn't see these two stomachs because they're hidden by the bulk of the keres. Yeah. Okay. All right. Then we said, Rabbi Yehuda Omer B'Gdoy L'Chola, we said that Rabbi Yehuda had said that when it comes to the Keres Achitzin, where the Tanakama had said that if most of the Keres Achitzin is torn, and again, according to Rabbi Yosef Chanina, which is the halacha, the Keres Achitzin means not any part of the Keres itself, but rather the abdominal muscles. So Rabbi Yehuda had said in a large animal, the amount is a tefach, and in a smaller animal, it's rubai. It's most of it.
That
would make it true. So, Amar of Binyamin by Yefes, Amar of Elazar, Loi Gdoila Gdoila Mamash, like Tanat Tana Mamash, the words large and small in our Mishnah don't mean the largest possible animal and the smallest possible animal. Ella, rather the definition is like this, Kol Shenikra Batefach Loi Havi Ruba, when you have, if there's a rift of the size of a tefach, and that is not yet the majority. So we're talking, let's say, an animal that's large enough. Well, let's say, again, we're talking about these abdominal muscles that cover the cava. So if you have, if you have an animal where the length of those muscles is, let's say, 2.5 tefachim, so therefore, a rip of a tefach is not yet a majority. So you have a tefach, but you don't have a majority. Zui shishinunu b'dola tefach. That's what it means when the Mishnah says, when Rabbi Yehuda says, that in a large animal, a tefach is enough to make it trace. Therefore, in other words, it'll be traced because you have a tefach rip, even though that tefach in this particular animal is not the majority. But tefach, when you have a rip of a tefach, v'loi havei ruba, but it didn't yet reach roiv, because let's say the whole length of those muscles is 2.5 tefachim, let's say. But then, zuhi shashaninu, b'gdola tefach. That's what we mean, that in a large animal, it'll be traced when you have a rip of a tefach. And the other way around, even though it's not roiv, because it's tefach. And if it's the other way around, if you have a rift that covers the majority, but even though that rift is not a tefach in length, so let's say you have an animal where that area is only a tefach and a half in size, a rift of, let's say, 4/5 of a tefach is enough to be the majority, even though it's not quite a tefach. That's what we mean, that in a small animal, the roiv. In other words, it's either a tefach or roiv, whichever is less. Whichever is less, as long as you have either a tefach or you have roiv, the animal is going to be trained. Okay. So let's analyze that. Ruba v'lo have a tefach pshita. Now, on the face of it, if you have a majority of it as rift, if that's not the size of a tefach, of course it's trained. Ruba kikulay, as usual. The answer is, loitzricha da'av ye tefach b'mashal. Yes, but the chiddush would be that, what if you have that, it's just slightly less. If you had a tiny bit less than roiv, then you would have a tefach. In other words, it's just under two tefachim. Ma'u detema ad mikra v'tefach lehav etreif. So you would think in that case, maybe you need a rip of a full tefach to make it treif. Amash malon, that is the chiddush, that even in that case, even though it's just a little bit under two tefachim, and therefore you would think maybe you need a full tefach. Maybe it's not just enough to have a bare majority, 51%. You actually need to have a tefach. No, as long as you have a bare majority, 51%, even though it hasn't quite reached a tefach, that's enough to make it today. That's what we're saying. In other words, no, it still has to be either roiv or tefach, whichever is less. But if the roiv
is two,
if the whole thing is just under two,
and therefore,
that's what we're saying. So if you have 0.75 out of just under two, it's neither. It's not half and it's not a tefach. So therefore, it's not trace.
That's
the point. Therefore, it's still kosher. But the chiddush is that if you have
a
rip of 51%, that rip of 51% equals, let's say, 9/10 of a tefach.
Right.
So you need only a tiny bit more to reach a tefach. So you would think maybe then that's not enough to pass it. Maybe it's not enough to make it trace yet. Maybe you need that. If the whole length of the abdominal muscles is, let's say, a tefach and a half, fine. We're not going to require a full tefach because a full tefach is going to be much more than 50% of the thing. But like this, where it's just under two. It's like 1.98 tefachim, let's say, for example. And you're going to say so we should make it trace if it has a rip of 0.99 of a tefach. Maybe we should say that you need at least you need to reach a tefach in order for it to be significant. The chiddush is that even then it's trace.
Even then it's
it's 1.97, let's say. So 0.99, it's just over half. Right. So therefore, you don't say that because it's 1.97, which is almost two tefachim, therefore, what we should consider the majority should be, we should consider that it would be considered a majority, not just if it's a bare mathematical majority, but only if it actually reaches tefach. The chiddush is we don't say that. That's the point.
So up to where we say...
So that's what we're saying. So it's either a tefach or roiv, whichever is less. If it's a larger animal and a tefach is enough, And you have room for a tefach even without it reaching roiv, then it's already straight. If it's a smaller animal and you reach a roiv without it being a full tefach, even if it's close to a tefach, even if it's much less than a tefach, that's also enough to make it straight. Right. Amar Gniva Amar Rabasi. Gniva now says in the name of Rabasi, here's another din in this connection, Nikdara Kisela Shecha. What happens if these muscles are not, what if you don't have, till now we've been talking about a rip, which is a long, thin thing. What if instead you have there's a piece cut out, a round piece, like a sella cut out? Then it would also be true. Why a sella? Because if you stretch out, if you take a hole, which is the size of a sella, and you stretch it out, so the circumference, the diameter rather of a sella is approximately 1/3 of a tefach. So if you were to take a hole that has the diameter of 1/3 of a tefach and stretch it out to make a long thin slit, then you would have a tefach. Talmud al tefach. Then it'll result. A sella is approximately 1/3 of a here's a picture then actually. Okay, so what it is rather the sella is Rashi versus Tosfos explains, Rashi and Tosfos have somewhat different explanations of what's going on over here. According to Rashi, what it is Rashi assumes that the sella is approximately 2/3 of a tefach in diameter. So therefore, if you pull it out, you'll have the whole circumference. Therefore, is about 2 tefachim because the circumference is about 3 times the diameter.
Nice.
So therefore, you'll have a tefach here and a tefach here. You'll have a slit over here, which is one tefach, which is one where each side of the slit is one tefach long. Tosfos understands it somewhat differently, which is more machmir. That what we mean is it's not a matter of taking the actual hole as it is and stretching it out. You're right. Then, according to Rashi, you would need a larger diameter. Rather, what it means is the diameter of the sella is about 1/3 of a tefach. If you measure the circumference of that hole, therefore it will be a tefach, and therefore that's considered the equivalent of a long hole, which is a tefach in size.
A sella is a tefach.
According to Rashi, if tefach a sella comes out to be 2 tefachim in circumference. If you take the actual hole that you have and stretch it out, you will wind up with a long slit where one long side of it is a tefach and the other long side is a tefach, and therefore, you have two tefachim of perimeter.
Right.
But that's the point. In other words, you need 2 tefachim of perimeter in a slit for the slit itself to be 1 tefach long, one on one side, one on the other side. Whereas according to Tosfos, what it is never mind that. We're not talking about taking the actual existing hole and stretching it out. What we mean is, in other words, if you were to measure the circumference of that hole, then you would have a tefach, because according to Tosfos, a sella is only 1/3 of a tefach in diameter.
So according to Tosfos, the circumference of a sella is 1 tefach.
Is 1 tefach. According to Rashi, it's 2, right. So therefore, it comes out Tosfos, in other words, is more machmer than Rashi, right. Okay. Omer of Chiyah Bar Abel, the Dimi Farshali Minei de Gneva.
Double the amount.
Because we have a Gemara over here, and it's not clear what the Gemara meant. When Ravina and Ravashi wrote the Gemara, obviously it was clear to them, but by the time of the Rishonim, it wasn't so clear, I guess. Okay. So, Omer of Chiyah Bar Abel, the Dimi Farshali Minei de Gneva, Amabra de Naharda. Gneva personally explained to me when he was standing on the bridge of Naharda. Now, he explained to me, what do we mean like this? Kisela kshera. Actually, it's not like we just said that if the hole is the size of a sella, then the animal is kshera. If the hole is exactly the size of a sella, it's still kosher. Yosem the kisela kshera. But only if it's a little over the size of a sella would it be kshera. The kama yosem. Then it won't be kshera. The kama yosem.
Say what's a sella.
Well, right. I mean, he didn't, because I guess in those times, they knew what a sella is, right? Okay. The kama yosim the kisela. So what do we mean more than a sella? How much more? Amr of Yosef said, you can measure it like this. They're going to island Tlas Kashyaita B'tzipa. If you take three date pits with the tzipa, which means the leftover bits of dates that are stuck to it, you have, and with many types of dates, you eat the date. You know how it is in general with fruit. You eat fruit. Sometimes you have where flesh of the fruit sticks to the pit. And sometimes, dates, so you have within dates themselves, you have different kinds. But yeah, sometimes you have the kind where flesh will stick to the pit, sometimes not. So if you take three date pits with the flesh that's still stuck on them, bedukhka, and then you can just barely fit them into the hole, or below sipa b'rabha, or if it's without the leftover flush of the fruit attached to it, and then you're able to get them in Viravcha comfortably, then you know it's over a sella, and then you know the animal is straight. But if it's any less than that, if you can't fit the three date pits in there with the flesh attached, and they don't even go in tightly, or without the flesh attached, but they go in tightly, then you know the animal is still kosher. Yeah. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Hemsis or Beis HaKosis. The next thing we said in the Mishnah is if the Hemsis or the Beis HaKosis, the third and second stomachs of the animal, if those have a hole from either one of them towards the body cavity of the animal. Now, we said in the Mishnah, we said that if there's a hole only between one and the other, then they're still kosher, because as it is, food passes from one to the other. So, okay, you're not supposed to have extra holes in there. It means the animal's not going to be able to get the full effect of digesting its food, but it's not going to kill it. Okay, so now let's talk about that. Tonar Abonon, we learn in a Braita. Machat shenimtis ba'ovi Beis HaKosis. If you find a needle in the thickness of the Beis HaKosis, so we talked about this the other day, that the Beis HaKosis has a lining over there. You have poskim who say that maybe not the whole thing is considered to be a double wall, but let's not get into that. The point is, there's some part of it that's considered to have a double wall. The pashtos is the area way over here where it has the reticulations, and then you have a wall outside of that. So whatever it is, if you find a needle in the Beis HaKosis, mitzad echad, if you find it sticking only into one side of the Beis HaKosis, ksheira, then it's kosher because you still have the other layer of the Beis HaKosis protecting, so that partially digested food won't make it out into the body. Literally, yeah, exactly. That's exactly why it's called Beis HaKosis, yeah. So if you find needle stuck into only one side of it, shader, then the animal is still kosher. Mishnei sodim, but if you find the needle going all the way through, chase, then the animal is chase, as we talked about before. More dinim about that. Nimsa lea kodas dam. If you find the needle, let's say you find the needle only, so now we have to figure out, let's say, okay, you do find the needle stuck through both sides, but we can see. Nimsa la kodat dam, if you find a drop of blood on the needle, v'yadua shalifnei shchita, then you know for a fact that that needle got in there and punctured through before the animal was shechted, and that's why you're finding blood on it.
On the needle.
So you find the needle stuck in from the inside of the Beis HaKosis to the outside, or vice versa.
Right.
So we're saying, if you find the drop of blood on it, then the animal is shechita. You know that it was punctured before shechita. Loy nimsa le'akor et dam. If you don't find a drop of blood on it, b'yadur shel achar shechita, then you know that it only punctured through after the animal was shechted, and in that case, there's no problem with shechita.
Blood was taken out.
Because once you shecht, most of the blood comes out in the shechita, so you don't really have enough blood. I mean, you obviously have blood in other places of the body. That's why you need to salt. That's why you need to soak and salt the meat. It means a small amount, a drop, let's say. Yeah. Okay. More dinim about that. And we're going to ask soon. The Gemara is going to ask in a minute, why don't we say the same thing with other chalitzas? We talked a few days ago, we were talking extensively about holes in the lungs. Why don't we say the same thing, whether there's a drop of blood on the needle or not? So we're going to get back to that point in a second. Higlid piyamaka, here's another din. If there's a scar over the hole, over the wound that was caused by the needle, then you know that the puncture took place at least 3 days before shechita, because that's why now it started healing. Now the healing doesn't help as far as traces, because we said that a healed wound doesn't matter, it's still trefa regardless. But the point is that if you know that it was at least 3 days before shechita, then it means if you bought it within and shechted it within 3 days, then you know that it's a mekach tov. Because then you have a right to go back to the seller and say, you sold me an animal that turned out to be trefa. I wouldn't have bought it if I knew that it had that problem. So therefore, you'd be entitled to that money back. Loy higlud pi amaka. On the other hand, if there's no scar developing over the wound, then you still don't know. It could have happened before. It could have happened more than three days ago. It takes at least 3 days, but sometimes it can take longer. So if it happened less than 3 days, you don't know whether it happened before you bought it or after you bought it. Therefore, I'm moitzi mechaver al varaya. So you want your money back, you're going to have to prove that it took that it took place before shchita or before you bought it, and you can't prove that. Obviously, therefore, you can't get your money back. In other words, so therefore, tough luck, basically. By the way, Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion over here that we're saying over here about the beis hakosis, that if there's a needle, hello, that if there's a needle through one side of it, then the animal's kosher, but if you have a needle through both sides, the animal's treif. Tosfos has a bit of discussion that would not be the case with the hemsis. The third stomach is not like that, because the hemsis has a different, the hemsis' lining is not like the beis hakosis' lining, it's much thinner. So therefore, if you have a needle, that went through one side, almost inevitably it'll have gone through the second side as well, and you just don't notice it.
The basis is not so thick.
It's thick enough that you have those two layers, and you're able to have a needle that punctured only one of them, but not the other. But Tosfos discusses over here that when it comes to the hemsis, it's not like that. The hemsis has a much thinner wall, and therefore, if you have a puncture in it, inevitably it's always true, basically, right? Okay, fine. So the question is now. So we just said that the by the way, Tosfos brings up a point, an interesting point about the hamotzi machaver al varaya. Now, obviously, if he already paid money for it, then for sure he's not going to be able to get his money back without bringing a proof, and he can't bring a proof, so therefore he's out the money. What about, though, let's say, Tosfos says, what if he didn't pay for it yet? Would we say, Hamotzi mechaver al varaya, and therefore he's not... What? Hatzor chosam l'monin shrei Yisrael. Fine, means we don't want to declare it treif if we don't have to, but that has nothing to do with here somebody is going to be losing money, either the seller or the buyer. No, but Tosfos says, nevertheless, we have a concept called kan nimtzu v'kan hoyu, that if you find something in a certain place, we assume that that's where it took place. So over here, since the needle was only found after the guy bought, so let's say, in other words, he bought it on credit. He hasn't yet paid for it. But because the needle was first being found after he shechts the animal, and then he discovers the needle in the beis hakosis, therefore, the rules of chazaka would tell us that it was in his possession that it took place, that it punctured through and became treif. He has no basis for saying, again, unless if it started healing, then he has a basis for saying that it happened at least 3 days ago. But if that's not the case, he has no basis for saying that it may have happened in your reshus, and therefore I shouldn't have to pay you, because kan nimtu v'kan hoyu. The seller will tell him, look, it was found in your reshus. It was found in your reshus. Therefore, we can assume that it took place, that the puncture took place in your reshus, and therefore you still have to pay me. Okay.
Doesn't have to be proof.
That's the point. In other words, Hamotzi Mechaver al Varaya. The fact that he hasn't yet paid doesn't mean he has the right to say, well, I didn't pay you yet, I shouldn't have to pay you unless you can prove that you're entitled to the payment. No, because we would say kan nimtzu kan hoyu. The seller would tell him, no, we agreed on this deal, you took the animal, you shechted it, you still owe me the money. I Hamotzi Mechaver al Varaya, it's not considered Hamotzi Mechaver in this case, because it was already agreed that he's selling the animal, and he already has the animal in his possession. Okay.
So he owns the animal.
Basically, yes, essentially.
Even though it could have been there before.
Right. What? No, so if it happened more than 3 days, if we have proof that it happened more than 3 days before, he's entitled to prove all
3 days, you can.
Huglod Piamako, that's what we said. If you have a scar over it, then it shows that it happened more than 3 days ago.
And how would you assess that the scar is older than 3 days?
Doesn't matter. Once you see a scar, you know that the puncture happened at least 3 days ago, by definition. It takes at least 3 days to start scarring over, right? Okay. So the question is, we mentioned that how do we tell whether the puncture happened when the animal was alive or after it's dead? So what we said depends whether there's a drop of blood on it. So the question is, Maishnam called the Kuvei Da'alma. So why is it different than any other case where an inner organ is punctured? Da'afagab Da'lekadam, even if you don't find blood in the area, Tarif, Torishmar. We still have been saying that it's chase. We never said, for example, with the lung or with the esophagus or with the stomach or any of the other things, that depends whether you find a drop of blood on it or not. So why over here should it be any different? The reason is hasam lekem midyula mistrach, because in all those cases we were talking about a puncture where you didn't find any needle or anything that caused the puncture. So therefore there's nothing for the blood to stick to. Even if the puncture happens while the animal is alive and blood comes out, it gets wiped away. Basically, it gets absorbed with the moisture of the organ over there, and there because it just drifts away, and therefore you don't see any evidence of it afterwards. Yeah, washed away. Over here, when you have a needle, kibbin ikamachat. Since you have a needle over here, you see what it is that caused the puncture. E issa dekodim shchitahu. If the puncture had taken place before the animal was shechted, misra havasarach, then the blood would have stuck to the needle. And the fact that you don't see any blood on it is good reason to assume that, therefore, that the puncture only happened after the animal was shechted. Which, in fact, Tosfos says, therefore, it wouldn't only apply to a needle. It would apply to any other foreign body that you find over there that made the puncture. So when we were talking about all this time, for example, yeah, whatever it is. So, for example, coats, for example, a thorn. Yeah, so any of those things. So all this that we've been talking all this time, for example, that if you find a puncture in the lung, then the animal is automatically traced, unless you have reason to think that maybe the bodik did it while he was checking the animal. That would only apply if we don't see the actual object that made the puncture. But if we see the actual object, such as the needle, then we can check and see whether there's blood on it or not. Okay.
Blood
is blood, yeah. The pasture.
Blood is not blood.
Okay, the point is, okay, but if it's so old, then eventually it would have started scarring over also. Fine.
They check the behemoth and they see a needle with some blood. And you will say that it's draper?
So that's the thing. If it goes through both layers of the Beis HaKosis, then yeah, it'll be chased. If it only goes through one side, then it'll be kosher. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, in general, as we've said many times, you don't usually have to check for trace for most traces because we don't have a reis, so we don't have any particular reason to think that they exist. When it comes to needles or whatever in the Beis HaKosis, that is one of the more common traces that they have to check for, because it's very common that an animal eats large quantities and accidentally in the course of that eats needles or other things. So they do regularly check for such things, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving along. Omelet of Safra Labaya. Rav Safra says to Rabbi, look, Rebbe, look what's going on with this young Talmid Chacham, the awesome Amar Rava, that he came from Eretz Yisrael, the Omar, and he says, Rav Avira Shmeini, he introduces himself, my name is Rav Avira, the Omar, and he says, Maiso Bolus Ne Rebbe, that it once happened, that a case was brought to Rebbe, that there was a needle that went through only one layer of the Beis HaKosis, not both layers, and we said before that should be kosher. The Tofa, and this Rav Avira is reporting that Rebbe said it's chase. So what's going on over here? How could he do that?
Not consider the keres.
Forget the keres. We said that the Beis HaKosis has a double wall, or at least some part of it has a double wall. Yes. And therefore we said that
it's one of the four stomachs.
It's the second of the four stomachs. So if one is punctured only, then it's kosher, we said. And yet the Rav Avira is telling... And yet this is the pasture. So, well, no, because if it was the outer one that was punctured only, then you have a different problem. How did it get punctured? You had some kind of foreign body got into the abdomen. Then you have a problem. It may have punctured other organs as well on its way in or whatever.
So it would be straight for
that reason, which we're going to talk about later on, about cases like that where you just find a... it's far away from the lungs, but similar concept, right. So no, here we're talking about, as we said the other day in the Gemara,
we're talking about internal,
the pastus, the animal swallowed the needle, and then you find the blunt end stuck into the Beis HaKosis. Okay, what happened was that a gob of food landed on it and pushed the blunt end in, but it said, yeah, okay. Fine, so anyway, so sort of Safra is telling Abaya, what are we going to do with this guy, Rav Avira, who's claiming that Rebbe said that even if it's punctured from only one side, it's safer. Sholachle, so Abaya sent a messenger to ask Rav Avira to come to him, so they can discuss it. Loy also legabe, and Mr. Rav Avira didn't show up. Also legabe, so okay, Abaya put his cupboard on the side and went to talk to Rav Avira. Went to where Rav Avira was staying to talk to him. So we'll see, and we'll talk about it in a second. Have a koi a igra. this Rav Avira was standing on the roof. Omar, so Abaya says to him, Nechus Mar Venesi, come, would you, Rebbe, come on down, please. Please come on down and come over here. Loi Nochus, and then this Rav Avira didn't want to come down. So Abaya went up to see him. Amale, and he says to him, Emily Gufa de Uvda Hechihava. So tell me, what actually happened over here? What's this case that you're describing? Now, why is Rav Avira doing it? So on the surface, it sounds like Rav Avira is being a chutzpanyak. And therefore, in fact, in the Iri says, you learn from this that even if you have, a person is not having Geracheres, nevertheless, put your covered on the side like Abaya did and go find out from him what's going on rather than just dismissing what he's saying.
He
went up to him. However, you have a different explanation. You have a different explanation that someone says. I don't remember who said. Oh, I think the Rabach. The Rabach writes in his Truvis. The Rabach, we know, had a famous machlokes with Rabbi Yaakov Beirav about reintroducing smicha. You have Rabbi Yaakov Beirav in his time, we're talking about 500 years ago, wanted to reintroduce smicha, and he got together the Chacham of Tzfat and they all agreed to reintroduce it. And then Rabbi Yaakov sent a message to Rabbi Levi ben Chaviv, the Rabach, who was the Rav of Yerushalayim, to invite to offer him a smicha as well. And the Rabach refused, and there ended up being a whole machlokas and a whole exchange of letters back and forth between them. And other Rabbanim of that period got involved about all the pros and cons. Can you reestablish smicha? And even if you did, is your way that you did it a valid way of doing it, et cetera, et cetera?
So, reestablish smicha when they don't have a,
because the Rambam writes, so the Rambam writes in Hilchos Sanhedrin that he says that if all the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael gather together and agree to reinstitute smicha, then the Rambam says they can do it. Now the Rambam says v'hadover tzarich hechra, that the matter still requires some analysis. However, so Rabbi Yaakov Beirav said, never mind that. The fact is that Rambam is saying that you can do it, and therefore, and he understands v'hadover tzarich hechra as referring to another particular detail that the Rambam refers to over there. So therefore, it's a valid thing. The Rabbach says, look, the Rambam himself was. No, the Rambam is the only one who writes it, but the Rambam is also the only one who paskins on these dinim that are negeya only lost in love. Anyway, so it became a whole machlokas between Rabbi Yaakov Beirav and the Rabach. So in one of these, this is a couple hundred years. The Rambam lived in the 1100s. This is in the mid 1500s. We're talking about 450 years later. Anyway, so during that exchange of letters, where there's the question, should the Rabach maybe come to Tzfat to talk about it in person with Rabbi Yaakov Beirav? So he refers to this Gemara, and he says, actually, Rabbi Avira may have had a good reason for doing what he's doing. He's coming as a representative of the Nesiim of Eretz Yisrael, so therefore he can't set aside his dignity, because he's representing the Nasi of Eretz Yisrael. He's reporting something that happened in Rebbe, and in fact he's going to say soon. He's going to say in a couple of lines that he's a Talmud of Rebbe, and he's coming and reporting.
Well,
so the Rabach argues that therefore maybe he had a valid reason. If he were to listen to Abaya and come to him or come down from the roof or whatever, it would be like saying the Nesiim of Eretz Yisrael and the people who they and then the people who represent them are obligated to listen to Bnei Bava, which isn't necessarily the case. Okay. Apparently. Okay. Anyway. Emily, so Abaya says to the Rav Avira, Emily Gufa de Uvda Hechihava, so tell me, what was the actual case over there that makes you say that Rebbe said that an animal was chafed if the puncture in the Beit HaKos is only in one layer of it? Emily, so Rav Avira tells him like this, Maskir Knesia Sanol, the Elome Rebbe Rabba, I am the Maskir Knesia higher, meaning that I serve Rebbe Rabba, which means Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi. What does it mean, Master Knesia? It actually says, I'm the one, I'm like the shulklopper. I'm the one who's in charge of bringing the Talmidim to the Beis Medrash, gathering them, this is Rabbi Avira. It's telling Abaya that my job back in Eretz Yisrael is I'm in charge. Rashi says Machnas or Moitzi Talmidim, that he brings in and out the Talmidim, and asks them, and he gathers them, and he tells them when to stand up, Leilach Beis Medrash, to leave the Beis Medrash. So in other words, like he's like a gabai, sort of, he's like a gabai or something in Rebbe's Beis Medrash. La'ela literally means above, but it's the way it was in those days is the Rosh Hashiva would sit, and the people who are attending on him would stand, so therefore they can be described as above him. But it means, in other words, he's saying that he's serving an important function. I guess he's called Rabbi Avira.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fine. Now, one time it happened, says Rav Avira, that Rav Huna from Tzipori and Rav Yosef from Modai were sitting in front of Rebbe as Talmidim. Oh, by the way, when we say Rebbe over here, it's a little hard to say it means Rebbe as in Rav Yehuda Hanasi,
yeah,
because Abaya lived long after him. It might be that it means Rav Yehuda Nasiah, who was the grandson of Rebbe. Okay, whatever it is, anyway. So there came before him such a case, Machat Shenimtas Ba'ovi Beis HaKosis Mitzad Echad, where there was a needle in the thickness of the Beis HaKosis, where it had only punctured one layer.
It was in the internal part,
the pastures, yeah. V'hofcha Rebbe, so Rebbe turned the Beis HaKosis inside out. In other words, yeah, it was only Mitzad Echad. You couldn't see the needle from the outside, but you could feel that it was there on the inside. But what did Rebbe do? He turned the Beis HaKosis out. He turned it inside out, so it looks like this. The umasa ala kodet dam, he found in it a drop of blood, the trofa, and he declared it trace. But Omar, because he said, after all, he meant shamaka kodet dam minayin, because if there was no wound over there when the animal was alive, how does there come to be a drop of blood? So obviously it was damaged while the animal was alive, and therefore that's reason to say it's trace. That is trace.
We imply that any time after the animal passed away, there couldn't be a drop of blood.
First of all, animals don't pass away. They're shechted or they die or whatever. Yeah, but they're passed away, let's reserve for human beings.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point is, yes, the idea would be after the animal is shechted, you have enough blood has been taken out of it that you're not going to have that something like that. If an internal organ gets punctured like that, it's not going to bleed. Right. It's not going to bleed, at least. Right. Okay. Okay. So therefore, so that's Rabbi Avira saying, therefore, that's why I'm reporting that Rebbe, or Rabbi Yehuda HaNasiya, or whoever it was, declared the animal trace, even if it was only punctured in one layer of the Beis HaKosis. Amale, so Abaya is very disappointed. He says, Torach tal yalahu gavra. Look at this. Look how much tircha you put me, you put that guy, meaning me, into. In other words, you caused me all this tircha that I came to you, and I came all the way upstairs over here, and because the point is, he's saying, you haven't taught us anything new. Masnithin he, because after all, what you just said is implied by the Mishnah. Hemsis or Beis HaKosis shenik v'lachut. That if the Hemsis or the Beis HaKosis have a puncture that goes from the inside of the organ to the outside of it, then it's straight. That's the case you're talking about over here. It wasn't just you're saying when Rebbe is saying in ein maka kodet dam minayin, what that amounts to is Rebbe was saying, how did there come to be blood? Because there was a puncture all the way through. Just now, we don't see that it goes all the way through because something caused it to get pushed back in, and therefore we don't see anything obvious from the outside. But Rabbi is saying what you just said is implied by the Mishnah. You have the original needle went all the way through. Yeah, that's why we found a drop of blood on it.
What we see, a drop of blood implies that it goes through.
That it went through. In other words, that's what we said. That nimtzela kodet dam b'yaduah shel lifnei shchita. Then we said, we know that it's before shchita.
We know that it's before shchita.
Right.
But we also know that it goes through to through.
Right. And that's why Rashi said at the top of the Omer, b'yaduah lifnei shchita utreifa. Right. That it means it's automatically trace. The Abaya is saying, look how much trouble you put me through to come to schlep over.
We didn't say that.
No. We did. But that, because that's what Abaya is saying. We can easily infer it from the Mishnah. Because we said in the Mishnah that only if it punctures through both layers, is it trace? And now what you're telling me is Rebbe was saying, because we see blood on it, that implies it punctured through both layers. Good. Well, we know that if it punctures through both layers of trace. Rabbi misunderstood it to mean that it means that it's only through one layer. But the way you just reported the case actually makes it clear. If Rebbe is saying in Ein Shamaka Kodet Dam Minayin, that implies that Rebbe is saying that it must have gone through both layers. Right now, we don't see it going through both layers, but nevertheless, at one point.
For this case. We didn't know that if you see blood, it automatically implies there are two layers are involved.
We already said before, Nimsela Kurat Dam Biadrua Shalifne Shchita, and Biadrua Shalifne Shchita automatically, as Rashi said, means it's straight.
Because
that's the point, because it's before the Shchita.
We didn't know that it's before the Shchita, only if one layer is involved.
If there's only one layer involved, there wouldn't be a Kurat Dam. Once we have a kodet dam, automatically that means there's both layers involved. No. That's the point. That's Abaya is telling him that after all this, Rebbe Avira, you haven't really told us anything new. So you made a whole to-do over it, and everybody's all excited that you're coming with a new din, and what are we going to do about you or whatever, and I came over here and then came all the way upstairs, and all you're telling me is something that we could have ourselves understood from the Mishnah.
I don't see what we said that automatically, because when it happened before the Shechita, yes, but
because
we said two layers.
We need two layers. And the fact that
a dam implies two layers.
Nimsa la kodat dam biadua shalifne shpita, zaf drashi u trefa. Why would it be trefa? Only because there's both layers. If there's one layer, we know it's not trefa. So therefore, if he's telling us that Rebbe is saying in ein maka, and here also Rashi says in ein maka zu yotis lachutz, if there hadn't been a wound over here that goes all the way to the outside of the Beis HaKodesh, then there wouldn't be any blood. Rashi says. So therefore, in other words, Rebbe had been right over here. Omar in ein maka zu yotis lachutz, if this wound hadn't been going outward,
meaning two layers,
dam zeminayin kan, then you wouldn't have any blood over here. In other words, if it only went through one layer, you still wouldn't find blood on the needle. The fact that you find blood on it implies that it went through both layers. So therefore, so Abaya is telling him that you put me to all this trouble for nothing. Right? Okay. Next thing the Mishnah had said is Nofla min agag. The next case.
The Bavli were just as good as the.
Well, it just means, in other words, that this Rebbe Avira hadn't told that. Everybody thought that Rebbe Avira is coming and reporting something new. And what are we going to do with this guy? Because he's contradicting the Mishnah. Now we see that. Because we thought, because the Mishnah had said that only if the Beis HaKodesh, is Nikvul Achutz, only if the puncture goes from the inside to the outside, is it Treif. He was claiming that Rebbe had said it's Treif, even if it only goes through one layer. And now we see that he didn't know what he was talking about. Okay.
Yeah, but...
Okay, let's continue. Let's continue and we can discuss it later if you want. Okay. Fine. Then we said in the Mishnah, Nafla min agag, we said that another case where the animal is treif is if it fell off a roof or any place that's 10 tefachim tall or higher. And in particular, what we said in the Mishnah is that if it fell off a roof, you have a problem. The Mishnah just said nothing in a gag, if it fell off the roof. The problem, if it falls off a roof, if it falls off too high an area, an animal, if it falls off a high place, what happens is you have a concept called risuk evarim, that you may have internal organs of it that are vital, for example, the spinal cord, or for example, any of the internal organs or whatever, may have been torn apart or crushed or whatever. Okay. So, if you left an animal up above on the roof, later on you come back and find it below on the ground, now there's two possibilities. Maybe it jumped off the roof, in which case there's no problem of risuk evarim, because it's able to brace itself when it jumps. The problem of risuk evarim is only if it falls unknowingly. Then there can be risuk evarim.
If it jumps, as
the Gemara is going to say soon, an animal has enough of a sense of self-preservation to jump only if it knows it's not going to get injured in the fall. So therefore, ein choshesh in mishum risuk evarim. We don't have to be concerned about this problem of internal organs being crushed. We didn't see it fall. So therefore, as usual with treifus, we said before that except for drusa, with all other treifas, if we have a suffix, whether the treifa happened at all or not, not when you see that there's a reyasa, but we don't know what the din is, then we're marking it with all of them, but with all the other seven categories of treifas, other than drusa, we said if we don't know whether anything happened even to the animal, then it's not treifa suffix. This is one of them. We don't have to worry that it fell down and therefore had risuk evarim. We assume instead that it jumped down, and if it jumped down, then it braced itself and it was able to land in such a way that it won't damage it. We didn't see it jump. That's the point. All we saw is we left the animal on the roof. We went off to do something else. We went off to run an errand. We came back an hour later and found it on the ground. We don't have to worry about risuk evarim. During that hour, we can assume that it jumped down.
How can you assume that?
Because again, we don't have a reyus over here. We don't have any particular reason to think that it fell.
You don't have any reason to think it didn't fall.
When it comes to all the categories of treifas except for drusa, we've already said that the rule is because only drusa is says explicitly in the pasuk, all the other categories of treifas that we've been discussing, all the other seven categories are halacha l'moshe Sinai, and therefore they have a different rule. When you have a case where you have a reyasa, but you don't know what the din of it is, because you have machlokas tanoyim or amaroyim or rishonim or what have you, then you say it's treif misafik.
Right.
But if you have where you don't even know whether there was a reyasa there in the first place, then you can be maful. And this is one of those cases where, because we don't know that it fell, therefore we do not have to assume that it fell. Therefore, we can assume instead that it jumped. So here's a case. Hahu ganya dehavile l'ravina. It happened once that there was a goat that belonged to Ravina, which was up on the roof. Dechaza chushla b'ipuma. It saw peeled barley on the ground under the skylight. So here's the example over here. So you have the animal was on the roof over there. Then it looked in through the skylight and it saw a pile of barley on the ground over there. So it jumped. Dogar. So it jumped. Nuff on the igra la'ara, and it fell from the roof onto the ground. So now you have a question: is there a problem of risu kevarim? Now, by the way, we're going to learn later on that if the animal gets up and walks afterwards,
right,
then it's kosher. Then there's no risu kevarim.
Yeah.
But no, it's not so obvious. We're going to talk about it. Okay, whatever. There's a couple of different things. There can be if it walks. There can be if it survives for 24 hours. Whatever. We'll get to that later. The point being, in this case, the animal didn't start walking. So now there's a question. Was the rooster cave burning?
Well, one
sentence. No, we don't know. Hold on. In the previous case where we just found it on the ground, that's different. Here we actually saw it jump. So the question is, after the kamei d'Ravashi, so the case...
And it remains on the ground. Didn't move.
And it didn't move. After the kamei d'Ravashi, so the case was brought to Ravashi, Amalei. So he says, what's the problem? We just said that. Rav Huna said that if you left the animal up above on the roof and you went and later on and you found it downstairs, and if it's going to be that, then it's not going to jump in the first place. But the answer is no. Well, that's the question. Why are we saying that if you found it later on downstairs that it's kosher? There's two possibilities. You could say mishum de isra midi la misrach. You could say the reason why normally it's not treif is because it usually has something to hold onto. Meaning, in other words, when you leave an animal on a roof and later on you find it on the ground, it doesn't necessarily even have to be that it jumps bechlal. It could be that it climbed down, sort of. It used handholds or footholds or whatever to be able to, so like it could jump a little bit and then hold on and then jump a little, whatever. It could lower itself gradually. Okay, whatever. The point is it has something to be able to hold on to, so therefore, like, break its fall. Well, then, in that case, here it wouldn't work. The high left will immediately miss. Here, there's nothing to grab onto because it fell for it. It went from the skylight to the ground. There's nothing in between. It's in the middle of the house. As opposed to when it fell down the side of a house, where you could say that then it was able to break its fall. Oy Gilma, or maybe the reason for Rav Huna's din is mishum de omdel nafsha, is because before the animal jumps, it figures out using its animal brain if it's too high a jump, then it's not going to jump in the first place. So you're asking about a fifth floor. Possibly, we could say that an animal is smart enough; it has enough of a sense of self-preservation that if it's five stories up, even if it sees food on the ground, it's not going to jump five stories. Because in its little animal brain, it knows it's not going to survive a five-story fall. Well, then, in that case, behind Nami Omda Napsha, in that case, we could say, okay, well, over here, obviously, also, it was able, it thought that it wasn't too high a jump, that it could do it without getting injured. So, okay, it's not getting up. Doesn't necessarily show that there was risk of kevarim. So that's the question. If we say, the question is, do we say that the reason why, in the normal case, we would say it's mutter is because because you have two possible reasons you could think that it's good. Number one, maybe it actually did one whole jump, but it did it in a way that it knows that it's gonna survive it. Or maybe it didn't even do a whole jump. Maybe it's sort of a clamber down kind of. In this case, it couldn't have clambered down because it was that you have a skylight in the middle of the roof over there. There's nothing for it to grab onto once it falls through. On the other hand, if you're saying that it jumped because it saw the barley, it jumps only if it figures it's going to survive it. So what would be the din in this case? Armalay. So Rav Ashi answers. The last one, Mishum the Omdam Napsha. No, the reason why in Rav Huna's case it's mutter is, never mind it's clambering down, because it figures out ahead of time, is this too large a jump for me? Behind that, Omdam Napsha. So in this case also, we can assume the animal made the same kind of calculation ahead of time, that it's only going to jump to try and get that barley if it sees it's not too high a jump. And therefore, in this case, we can assume, so therefore it's still kosher. There's no problem of risuk eivarim. Even if the animal doesn't get up, we can still shecht it and it's still kosher.
And there's nothing broken?
If after we open it up, we find something broken, then we'll deal with it then. We'll see whether it's kosher or not. But we don't have, like this, the issue of risuk eivarim we're going to talk about later is that when you have a case of risuk eivarim, what you actually have to do is you have to check every possible organ that could have been damaged in the fall.
That's right.
And in fact, by the way, in Shulchan Aruch mentions, in general nowadays, we don't have the expertise to do that kind of thing. And therefore, if the animal doesn't get up and walk, or if it doesn't survive 24 hours or whatever, then we have to say it's Shereis Nisachos. So if we say that you don't have to check, if we say that we're not choshish, means you don't have to check for anything at all. If in the course of opening up the animal, you happen to find, let's say, that the spinal cord is broken, or some other organ is damaged, then you'll deal with it, then you'll deal with it then. But you don't have to go and check it, as opposed to if we said that we were choshish, it would mean you'd have to check every single internal organ and see whether there's any damage there.
We have a chazaka that there's no issue kivaring, and let's say we found a bruise. We found a wound, a slight wound on the animal.
A slight wound wouldn't be enough to make it safe. So if it was on one of the internal organs, the answer is
it could be risuk eivarim.
No. If you just find a bruise on the outside of the animal, fine. At most you'd check the internal organ close to that point and see. Right? At most, maybe you'd have to do that. Maybe not even that. But the point is, you're like this. If there was a problem with risuk eivarim, you would have to check every single internal organ from head to toe.
How would you come to that suspicion that there is risuk eivarim?
For example, if the animal fell off. So, for example,
that's the point.
If, for example, so we said in the mission in Nachlam and Agag, if you were actually there when the animal fell off the roof,
fine.
Then
if you were there, there's no shot.
Okay, but there's other cases that we're going to talk about also.
Fine.
The point is, if we know that the animal fell off a roof or something high, then you have a problem of risuk eivarim. If you don't know, we're saying that as long as you have reason to think that the animal may have jumped knowingly and could figure out before it jumps whether it's a jump that it's likely to survive, then you're okay. Then you can assume it jumped rather than fell.
You're telling me if you have reason to believe that the animal jumped, but you still find some bruises on the animal, there's no suggestion of risuk eivarim.
Apparently that's so, yes. At most, you might have to check the organ right next to that bruise and see if it got damaged. But you would not have to check every single internal organ and see if they were damaged. Okay, let's continue. Hashi imresa dehavi beira chaviva. There was a female sheep that was in the household of Rav Chaviva. Dehavu shadran kare basraisa. It was dragging its legs behind it. So therefore, that's the question.
That's
the question. Therefore, is it maybe that its spinal cord got damaged? Amar of Yemer. So Rav Yemer says that's not a problem. Hai shigroina nakke. All it is this animal has sciatica or a hip disease or something like that. Cramps. Rashi translates it as it doesn't necessarily make it straight. Maski for Ravina. However, Ravina asks on that. What do you mean? B'dumachot ashedre itzik. Maybe the spinal cord was broken, and in that case, it would be straight.
I can still walk.
That's why it's dragging its hind legs. So the answer is, so what happened? Bodkua, so sure enough, they ended up shefting it and they checked it. Ashkechua, Kiravina, in that particular case, they found that, like Ravina had said, the spinal cord was cut. However, Vasfilu Hochi Hilchasa Kiravyema. Nevertheless, the halacha is like Ravyema, that if you didn't see that this animal fell, in general, when you have an animal that's dragging its legs, that's not considered a reisa that you should have to check the spinal cord. Why? Shigroina shchiach, because sciatica or hip disease or whatever is common enough. Chut ha-shedra lo shchiach, the spinal cord should be cut, is not such a common thing. So again, that's not considered a common enough thing. If there's a reisa, so even this particular animal, you see it's dragging its legs, that's not reason enough to suspect that the spinal cord was cut. If you find it was, then obviously you'll say it's straight. But you don't specifically have to check.
If you find that it fell, then
you have a problem. Yes. If it fell down, then you have a problem. Right. Then there might be risk of a problem.
Yeah.
If it fell down, yeah. But here we're talking about there was nothing indicating that it had fallen down. So in this particular case, it turned out that the spinal cord was cut. But in general, we wouldn't have to be choshish for that. Okay.
Boy, oh boy.